Okay, good morning, Shavua Tov. Every year I'm astounded to see that people actually come back for the pre-Pesach workshop. Yeah, it's group therapy to prepare ourselves. Yeah?
Yeah, otherwise I'm keeping
us. Okay. You know, because I'll tell you the truth, I don't prepare much for this talk, and it's not because I don't respect you, it's because there's not that much that changes. So on the one hand, I'm surprised that we all come together again. On the other hand, I guess we hear the Parsha every year, it doesn't change either. So it shouldn't be that... Yeah, exactly. You block it out till the next child. So here's the order. Here's how we're going to arrange this this morning, as we do every year. First, I'm going to share with you some of the theory behind the halachas, the laws of Pesach, in terms of the laws of chametz, why chametz is unique. Then we're going to go into the details about how one needs to prepare their home. We'll walk around the virtual house together, talking about how to prepare the home. Then we'll spend specific time in the kitchen, walking around a virtual kitchen together, how one prepares and uses the different appliances of the kitchen. And then lastly, we'll talk about different ingredients and different lists and the questions people have. But let me say at the outset, it used to be, when I was a kid, which wasn't that long ago, and even just a few years ago, rabbis had access to these secret lists. Congregants did not. We therefore had all of the power. Congregants came to us, which we would rather not have had that power, but we did. And anyone wanted to know, ranging from which, if their lipstick made the list, to whether what the status of milk was, we had the list. Today, thank God, we live in an incredible time where you can access everything. So let me make a few recommendations even before we begin. It doesn't mean that we're canceling the rest of this pre-Pesach workshop, but I mean to suggest that as the weeks and days go by leading up to Pesach, the countdown, which has certainly begun, feel free to call me anytime, call Rabbi Moskowitz anytime. You can email, you can tweet, you can Facebook, we're here to help you. But I would suggest to you, because we will likely be going right to one of these websites to find the answer, that if you would prefer to be more efficient and skip that step, but you're welcome to contact us, you can go to the websites yourself. The first, the best one I recommend highly is the CRC, Chicago Rabbinical Council. Their website is crcweb.org. The CRC, I find in general, is the most balanced, the best resource that's out there. They have a phenomenal app for the iPhone and iPad. It has lists ranging from which Slurpee flavors are kosher, to how you clean different vegetables, to what needs a hechsher at all. So their app is phenomenal, it's fantastic. And they've just added on the CRC app, if you have it and you haven't updated it, update it, because they now have a Passover 2012 button link on their app, which has everything you could want to know, including a search function. So if you're in the supermarket and you want to know, does this need to be kosher for Pesach? Is this on the list? Then you'll be able to simply search it on their app. So CRC Web, you can go on the web and you can find it, or you can go on the app. The other, of course, is the OU. The OU is always very... What? Has an app for Android. I'm sorry, I don't mean to be... I'll tell you something interesting. We finally, last week, used the Google Analytics to look at our fairly new website to see what people look at. So one of the features with Google Analytics is you could see those who look at it in a mobile device, what kind of mobile device are they using? By the way, I know which room you were in your house when you looked at our website. So the Google Analytics are unbelievable. I know what you were wearing when you looked at our website. The Google Analytics are incredible. So 90% of people who looked at Boca Raton Synagogue's website, which was thousands of people since we've started the new website, 90% were looking on an Apple device. I wanted to go buy Apple stock after looking at this. Whether an iPhone, an iPad, or an iTouch, 90% of the people on a mobile device. So I know that happens to not be true more globally. There are more Android users than iPhone users, but I think in the Jewish or Orthodox community, it's not that way. Okay, but you didn't come here to hear my analysis of technology. So CRC Web is one. The other is the OU, has a fantastic website. The OU also has an app for the iPhone and Android. And the last is the Star K. Star K does not have an app that I know of, but Star K is also a very valuable resource. And their website is star-k.org. Star-k.org. So all... OU is OU.org. So all three of these websites are tremendously valuable resources. Each of them has a Pesach guide that you can print. Again, those who are here early got... We printed just a handful of the copies of the CRC one. I find that's the best one. If you're going shopping, put it in your pocket or download the app and you'll be in good shape. Okay, so let's get started. Pesach, we know, is a very stressful time. It's a stressful time because we have this totally hostile relationship with this object called chametz. We have this weapon of mass aggravation that can be found in our homes, and therefore we go on a major tour to search and seek and destroy all of the chametz. The Rambam writes in his introduction to the laws of chametz and matzah that there are actually 8 mitzvos. There are no less than 8 separate commandments that apply to chametz and Pesach, or to Pesach today. 3 positive commandments, 3 mitzvos asay, and 5 negative commandments, 5 los asays. The 3 positive commandments are to destroy leaven, lahashpis sa'or, number 2, to eat matzah, and number 3, to tell the story of the Exodus. Those are the 3 positive commandments of Pesach. The 5 negative commandments of Pesach are, you can't eat chametz from midday on Erev Pesach and on. You can't eat all 7 days of Pesach, or for us 8 days. You can't even eat a mixture that contains chametz. You're not allowed to see chametz that you own, and chametz that you own cannot be found. Ba'yirah and ba'yimatzah. Why am I sharing that with you? We could speak for hours on each one of these, but just to emphasize that when it comes to Pesach, there are 3 positive and 5 negative commandments. Chametz is the epicenter of the Pesach experience. Why is that? None of you came this morning to spend time on it, but very briefly, chametz represents the contrast of chametz and matzah. Chametz and matzah are composed of the exact same ingredients. You take flour, you mix it with water, you knead it, you put it in an oven to bake. You get chametz, right? You get bread, or you get matzah. There's only one difference between chametz and matzah. What's that one difference?
Time.
So Pesach is all about our relationship with time. It's all about our appreciation of time. Again, you didn't come this morning to discuss this at length. But why is that? Because Pesach is all about freedom. It's all about liberty. It's about emancipation. It's about leaving slavery. So one of the defining characteristics of freedom, of liberation, is our control over time. Is our relationship to time. A slave has no control over time. We're out of the CRC ones, we have the OU ones. The slave has no control over their own time. A free person is the arbiter of their own destiny. So the way that we mark Pesach, which is all about freedom, is our relationship with time. And what greater way to symbolize a relationship with time than the symbolism of chametz and matzah. So chametz, which is leaven, which is laziness and procrastination, and hesitation, it's when you do nothing. You mix flour and water and you do nothing, and it's allowed to rise. Chametz is the symbol of laziness and procrastination. It is the symbol of time controlling you. Matzah, which has to be made with enthusiasm and alacrity and zeal, is the symbol of efficiency, of an attitude of making the most out of every second, out of every moment of time. So when we talk about this mitzvah, the commandment to eat matzah for those days, and when we talk about this search and destroy mission, to eliminate any trace of chametz in our lives, it's not just, although it is, a group neurosis, but it's not just a national neurosis. There's a symbolism which is supposed to be transformative. The end of this period of preparing for Pesach, we are supposed to be filled with such alacrity and enthusiasm. We're supposed to appreciate every moment of time and make the most of our time. We're not supposed to fall under the weight and heaviness of when you talk about yeast and it's rising and it's leaven. It's a symbol of laziness, it's the symbol of arrogance, it's the symbol, the inflation of bread versus matzah is the symbol of the inflated ego. Because the ego has no appreciation of time. Somebody with a big ego doesn't mind making you wait and doesn't need to show up on time and doesn't need to make the most of every moment because time is there to serve them. So again, there's a tremendous amount of symbolism, which is not why you came here this morning. Once you finish preparing and you've made the siddurim, we'll have time to talk about this over Pesach. For now, I know you're here to get ready for Pesach. But that's, I didn't want to spend the time we will this morning with this absolute obsessive compulsive neurosis over chametz and not at least give a word of introduction why we're doing it. Chametz is unique. It has 5 unique prohibitions to it. Number 1, there is a specific Torah prohibition not only against chametz proper, but even against mixtures that contain chametz. Number 2, we have 2 prohibitions of even owning chametz. Could I own a pig farm? Absolutely. I just can't eat the pigs. There's no prohibition of owning a pig. There's no prohibition of getting benefit from a pig. I know somebody who tragically just had a terrible accident with terrible burns, and they needed a graft, and they used pig skin to cover the skin. And they asked a question, is it okay? Of course it's okay, as long as you don't eat it, you're fine. People get an valve replacement, right, with a pig valve, it's no problem halachically. As long as you don't swallow it to get to your heart, you're okay. So, but chametz is different. Chametz, not only am I not allowed to eat it, I'm not even allowed to own it. And not only can I not own it, there are two prohibitions. We call bayirah and bayimatzah, I can't see it and I can't find it. Number three, there is a positive commandment to dispose of it. In other words, when I go around my home, when on Erev Pesach, I go near the dumpster where we're burning chametz, and I burn chametz, I am fulfilling a positive commandment. And again, within our model, the symbolism, it makes sense. It's not just that I make sure that I have no chametz in my life. I destroy chametz. I destroy inefficiency. I destroy laziness. I destroy procrastination. I make that statement. And number four, chametz is what's called asr bahana. You're not allowed to derive benefit from chametz. I can derive benefit from other non-kosher. For example, if my dog loves to eat cheeseburgers, my dog could eat cheeseburger actually is a bad example because meat and milk is also a problem. You can't derive benefit. If my dog loves to eat pork, I could give pork to my dog. But I can't give chametz. Chametz I'm not even allowed to own. I can't do business with. It's a whole question. Can I own stock in Entenmann's? Do I have to sell my stock? When I list my form where I sell my chametz, do I have to sell stock that I own if it's in the chametz business? This is a debate. We follow the opinion that says I don't, unless you have so much of the stock that you have a controlling interest. Halavai. So unlikely you need to sell it. And the fifth and final uniqueness of chametz is that it's asur b'mashehu. It is prohibited even in the most negligible amount. When it comes to all other prohibited foods, we rely on something called bittul, nullification. There's different ratios for different foods. The standard ratio is 60 to 1. So if Yocheved's making a big pot of chicken soup, and her husband, the moron, is pouring a cup of coffee, and a drop of the milk falls into the chicken soup, what's the law? You look at the chicken soup, and if there's 60 of this chicken soup, a proportion, a ratio of 60 times the drop of milk, I don't have to sleep on the couch. You could still eat the chicken soup. Why? The milk is nullified in the chicken soup. It's as if it's not there. The milk becomes chicken soup. This is a whole discussion exactly how the principle works, but it's perfectly kosher. I'll tell you an interesting aside. Not only is it perfectly kosher, the Darche Tshuva quotes on Shulchan Aruch. Let's say I want to be so pious that I say, honey, there's milk in the chicken soup. I know it's a ratio of less than 60 to 1, but there's milk in the chicken soup. We can't eat that. We're so religious. We're so righteous. We're so pious. We can't eat that. We'll give it to the housekeeper. We'll give it away. We can't eat it. There's an opinion on the Shulchan Aruch that writes, an individual who says such a thing is a heretic, is a kofer. Why? Because God's the one who said you can't eat milk and meat mixed together. And God's the one who said that at 60 to 1, it's nullified. It's not a problem. Now you're going to be more religious than God? You're a heretic. You're not following God's rules. You're following your own rules that you made up. It's a fascinating insight. So normally I rely on nullification. If something falls into another mixture, the sky doesn't fall, the world doesn't come to an end, there's often ways to get around it. Chametz, the sky falls. Chametz is prohibited even in the smallest, most negligible amount. There's never nullification. We never say bittul. How do you define chametz? What is chametz? Chametz is flour made from any of the five types of grain, mixed with water, and allowed to rise for more than 18 minutes before being baked. What are the five types of grains that in all of Jewish law define bread stuff? They are rye, oats, barley, spelt, and wheat. Wheat, spelt, rye, barley, oats, and rye. Those are the five types of grain. By the way, those are the five types of grain whose flour mixed with water constitutes chametz, but the opposite is also true. Those are the five types of grain whose flour mixed with water can constitute matzah. That's why you can have people who are celiac or on gluten-free diets, there's gluten-free matzah. You have to take two or three mortgages on your home in order to buy it, but that's the expense of it. But there is a gluten-free matzah because matzah does not have to be made out of wheat. Matzah can be made out of spelt, barley, oats, or rye as well. Chametz can only come from those five grains. If it's not from those five grains, it's not chametz. Now we have another category, it's called kitnios. Kitnios, again, each of these topics we could elaborate on for hours. What is kitnios? Kidneyos was a prohibition that first came in the period of the Gaonim, the early Middle Ages, where there's a debate among the commentators why the stringency, the chumrah of kidneyos first came to be. Some say it's because legumes were being packed in sacks, that in order to bulk them up, the proprietors who were trying to sell them would put some barley or some flour or some wheat in the sack in order to make it look bulkier, in order to look sturdier, so that people would purchase their legumes. So, in other words, chametz was mixed in, so therefore the rabbi said, because it could lead to actual chametz, we don't kidneyos. That's one school of thought. Another school of thought says, no, kidneyos is prohibited because anything that can be manipulated to create a food that resembles chametz, we don't eat on Pesach, lest we come to eat chametz itself. So legumes can be ground into a flour that can be manipulated to resemble chametz, and therefore to avoid eating ultimately the actual chametz, we avoid those legumes. What falls into this category called kidneyos is an area of great debate. We'll come back to that maybe at the end when we analyze some of the legumes. This prohibition of kidneyos was instituted in Ashkenazic countries, France, Germany, and the like. Was never adopted in the Sephardic countries, Spain, Portugal, and so on. So Sephardim, of course, continued to eat what we call kidneyos because it's not chametz. Ashkenazim, those of Ashkenazic descent, do not eat kidneyos, but we don't treat it as chametz. Now that's important to know for a few reasons. Because first of all, kidneyos, there's no problem owning it. You just can't eat it. It's not chametz. You're allowed to get benefit from kidneyos. So if you want to feed it to your pet on chametz, on Pesach, you'd be allowed to. Somebody who's sick, who needs that kidneyos substance, would be allowed to have kidneyos. A child for whom there's no substitute, baby formulas, almost all have kidneyos. You'd be allowed to feed them kidneyos. We would say nullification bittel. If a little kidneyos fell into your chicken soup on Pesach, you would rely on the 60-to-1 ratio rule. Because kidneyos is not chametz. We have a stringency that we don't eat it for either of those two reasons I mentioned, but kidneyos is not chametz. Now, do we create new categories of kidneyos? I mean, today it's remarkable. Today you go to the supermarket and you can get kosher for Pesach bagels, kosher for Pesach pizza, kosher for Pesach bread. So the rule of kidneyos that we're afraid to create foodstuffs that are manipulated to look like chametz, we don't introduce new things that didn't exist at the time they originally instituted kidneyos. What's the primary example of that? Potatoes. If they did, the rabbis in Europe would have instituted potatoes as kidneyos. They couldn't do that because that's basically the Pesach cookbook. Had Susie Fishbein lived in Poland in the 18th century, her cookbook would have been 101 ways to make potatoes. That's what her Pesach cookbook would have looked like. That was all they ate on Pesach, was potatoes. If they ruled out potatoes, there'd be nothing left to eat. So today, of course, we don't institute new forms of kidneyos that didn't exist then, but we still have our categories of kidneyos that we continue to avoid today. So flour made from the five grains that comes in contact with water and remains 18 minutes without manipulation constitutes chametz. We have to be very careful, as I mentioned, because chametz is what we call aser b'mashu. It's prohibited even with the most minute, negligible amount. So how do we get rid of it? What do we do to make sure we don't own it? The symbol of laziness and procrastination and arrogance and inflated ego. How do we get rid of it? So there are a couple methods. Number one, we do something called bittel chametz. We relinquish our ownership of it. Bless you. So the night of Bedikas Chametz, the night before Pesach, when we search our home, and then again in the morning when we burn Chametz, there's a little Aramaic formula we recite. Although to tell you the truth, it's better to recite it in English if you happen to not speak Aramaic. And in that formula what we say is, any Chametz found in my home that I don't know about, that I do know about, that I'm aware of, that I'm not aware of, should be considered null and void. I relinquish any ownership or any relationship with it. So one way, because remember, we said, you only violate the prohibition of chametz if you own it. If you don't, this is also an important thing. I remember as a kid thinking that if I had to go to the supermarket on Pesach, if I walked down the bread aisle, I had to walk down like this, because you can't look at bread, you can't look at chametz. There's no problem looking at chametz that doesn't belong to you. The only prohibition of chametz is if you own it. If you don't own it, there's no prohibition. There's no prohibition of smelling it, of looking at it, and so on. The problem is if you own it. So, the first solution is to not own it. And how can you not own it? You declare your chametz ownerless. I hereby relinquish all of my relationship, all of my chametz. There's a second method, which is what we do, called bedikas chametz. We search our homes. and we look absolutely everywhere, and we turn them upside down and inside out, we search and destroy. Now, why do I need both methods? If it's good enough, I mean, imagine if all you needed to do to get ready for Pesach was close your eyes and say, I hereby relinquish all of my relationship with you, Chametz. You're no longer mine. You are now hereby ownerless. All right, honey, we're ready for Pesach. House is ready. Wouldn't that be incredible? Why do we have to do Bedikas Chametz if all you could do, if Bitul Chametz, this is the beginning of Maseches Pesachim, Rashi, Tosfos, the Gemara deals with this. Why do we do both methods if either one of them would be good enough, even on a biblical level? So of course, the reason we do Bedikas Chametz also is because of that moron husband of yours. That even though you'll declare the Chametz ownerless, and you likely would remember for the 8 days, if you encountered the donut in the cupboard in your house, oh, I don't own it, I can't eat it. But your husband is not as thoughtful as you are. And he's going to come across that donut. He's going to come across that chametz. And he's going to forget that it's Pesach. And he's going to forget that you've declared it ownerless. And he's going to end up eating chametz. So the reason we do bedikas chametz, we search for chametz, even though we've relinquished ownership, is to make sure it's not in our home, it's not exposed or accessible to us, lest we come to eat it, even by accident. So now that I'm doing a search and destroy mission, why do I need to relinquish ownership? Once I've sought. The answer is, because maybe I didn't find everything. Maybe there's my kid stuck a donut under their mattress for later and forgot about it, and I didn't look under the mattress, and I'll forget about the donut. Now I'll violate owning chametz on Pesach, so therefore we combine both of these methods. We actually had a third method as well. By the way, what happens if you search the house but you find chametz on Pesach? So if you find it on the holiday itself, you cover it with something. If you find, and then on Chol HaMoed, you destroy it. Flush it down the toilet, throw it in the dumpster, you get rid of it. Now, every year on Pesach, invariably, I don't know who's organizing this major conspiracy, but you open the mailbox, and there's a sample of cereal, there's a sample of... It's like invariably on Pesach, you know... Who makes the cereals, whatever, they get together. General Mills gets together and looks at the Jewish calendar. When is Pesach this year? When are we sending out the samples? So what do you do when you find chametz on Pesach? You have to get rid of it. The third method is, of course, what? You could. Right. You could seal the area where it is. You could seal the area where it is also. No, but that's included in your sale. That's not a problem. That's not a problem. The third method is to sell your chametz. To sell your chametz. That through an agent or directly to a non-Jew who purchases the chametz in your home. You would still have to search your home, but that's a third thing that you do. Okay. So now we move on to the practical part. We're going to go on our virtual tour of the home. But before we do, I have to make the following disclaimer. And I do every single year. There's a law when it comes to Pesach which is very, very neglected. And that law of Pesach is that a person is supposed to experience simcha, joy, and happiness, and excitement when it comes to Pesach. This is codified in Shulchan Aruch, it's quoted by the Rambam. There's a mitzvah of simcha. There's a unequivocal mitzvah of simcha on Yontif. Shulchan Aruch Tav Kuf Chav Tes Chayev Adam Lio Samech V'Tov Lev B'Moed Hu V'Ishto U'Vanav. Mishnah Berurah adds V'Noheges Gam B'Nashim. A person needs to feel a sense of joy on Pesach. I say this every year at the risk of having rotten fruit thrown at me. I'll say it again. If you're walking into Pesach like a shmata, like a battered and abused person, because you've been on your hands and knees with a toothbrush, you've been on a ladder cleaning the ceiling fan, you've been with a toothpick making your way through the toaster oven, it is 1,000% your fault and has nothing to do with Jewish law or Judaism at all. Because what you engaged in was spring cleaning, not Pesach preparation. Pesach preparation should take the house a few hours, the kitchen maybe a day. Maybe. If you're doing more than that, you're doing spring cleaning, you're not preparing for Pesach. And if the result of that is you are sapped of your joyful life and you crawl into Pesach like a shmata, Don't blame the Torah or the rabbis or Judaism. It is absolutely 100% your fault. And I'm going to explain to you exactly what I mean and exactly how. The Torah is much more concerned with your coming besimcha. Come to the Seder night with energy and excitement, with a Dvar Torah to share, with whatever. But when you come like a shmata, it's never what the Torah expected, it's not the Torah endorsed, and it's not the way that it needs to be. We are obligated to get ready for Pesach. There's no obligation for spring cleaning. If you want to observe all kinds of crazy stringencies, and if you want to do a spring cleaning, do spring cleaning beginning Motzei Pesach. Don't do spring cleaning in anticipation for Pesach, and then blaming the rabbis, the Torah, and the Jewish people. Okay, all of that is in advance. Now, here are the rules of chametz, which you'll see that the net result when you combine these rules is it shouldn't take more than a few hours to prepare your home for Pesach. Rule number one, if during the year chametz is not brought into a particular place, it need not be cleaned or checked for chametz. Rule number one, if during the course of the year chametz is not brought into a particular place, it need not be cleaned or checked for chametz. So, how many people recently have been riding around on their ceiling fan eating a sandwich? How many people have moved the oven out, sat behind the oven to eat their sandwich? How many people, right? My point is, now, there's one caveat to this rule. The Mishnah Berurah mentions, by the way, I have source sheets, I'm happy to give anyone afterwards. Everything I'm saying appears in the Talmud, the Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam. This is not some YU guy in 2012 with all kinds of leniencies. This is all clearly based black and white on halacha. The caveat is, if you have children, to a certain extent, all bets are off. If you have children, there's almost no place that you can say with confidence that chametz has not been brought. Now that said, there still are places you could say with certainty. Even your children have not made their way to the ceiling fan or moved the refrigerator or oven out. If you're moving an appliance, you're doing spring cleaning, you're not getting ready for Pesach. There is no halacha anyone can show me anywhere which will require them to move an appliance. If you're moving an appliance, you're doing spring cleaning, you're not getting ready for Pesach. There is no reason to ever need to move an appliance. But it's true, if you don't have children, or if you have older children, that means to say that anywhere in your house where you don't bring chametz is ready for Pesach. So the guest room, and the garage, and the bathroom, and the wherever, it's ready for Pesach. You don't need to clean it, you don't need to scrub it, you don't need to... It's ready for Pesach. It's ready to go. If chametz doesn't come there during the year, you don't need to clean it. You don't have to go into the crawl space over the garage. You don't have to move the appliances. You don't have to go to the ceiling fan. What you see people doing their back-breaking work on, you absolutely do not need to do. Let me just finish this part, and then I'll take the questions on this. That's rule number one. If chametz does not go there, you do not need to clean it. Rule number two. If it's not used on Pesach, there's no need to check it or clean it, provided you seal it and chametz will be sold. Okay, rule number two. If you don't plan on using it or accessing it over Pesach, you don't need to clean it. All you need to do is seal it and make sure you sell your chametz. So now what does that mean? The toaster oven. The toaster oven, the sandwich maker, the blender, the food processor. You don't need to do one stitch of work on them. You don't need to take them apart. You don't need to take a toothpick or toothbrush to them. Zero. You put them in a box and put it in the garage and sell your chametz. That's all you need to do. If you're not going to use it or access it on Pesach, you do not need to clean it or prepare it. You need to seal it, put it away, and sell your chametz. So there's no reason for toothbrushes and toothpicks. There's no reason to clean out toasters and food processors. There's no reason, by the way, if you determine that there's areas of your home that you're not going to use over Pesach, again, this is assuming you have grown children, then you simply close the door and put a piece of tape over it, and that room is now ready for Pesach. You're ready to go. If you're eating out every meal on Pesach, every meal, even if you're home, seal the door to the kitchen, and your kitchen's ready for Pesach. If you're not accessing it and using it over Pesach, it does not need to be cleaned. It just needs to be sealed and put away, and you sell your chametz. 90% of your work we've just taken care of, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to move appliances out, climb on ladders for ceiling fans. You don't have to clean little appliances that you're going to put away anyway and not use on Pesach. You don't have to clean spaces. If your garage, if you have a garage refrigerator, which is a nightmare and you're not going to use it over Pesach, put a piece of tape over it. Whatever you will not be accessing over Pesach, you do not need to do anything to. Number three, crumbs that are inedible even by a dog are not chametz, no matter how big they are. Even bigger than a kazayas, even bigger than 30 grams. Chametz, which is inedible to a dog, is not edible, it's not food, and therefore is not subject to the rules of chametz, and therefore not a problem. By the way, anything you would find behind the oven or fridge, if you moved it, would likely fall into this category. If it's inedible to a dog, it doesn't matter how big it is, then it's not called chametz, and it doesn't create a problem. Rule number four. You do not even need to check for crumbs that are less than a kazayas, smaller than 30 grams, and that are dirty or spoiled to the point that a person wouldn't eat it. So now here we get to the floor, right? I have images of my mother on her hands and knees with a toothbrush, the grout in between the tile of the kitchen floor, cleaning. God bless my mother. I wish I knew something when I was a kid and I could have stopped her then. There's no reason. Because any crumb that's in the grout of your tile floor, any crumb that's underneath the oven or fridge, if you've sprayed it with cleaner, or it's soiled to the point that it's inedible to a person, which I hope we all have a decent threshold of what that definition is, then it does not need to be cleaned. So therefore, let's put the four rules together. Right? What were the four rules again? If during the year chametz is not brought there, it doesn't need to be cleaned or checked. If it's not used on Pesach, you don't plan on having access to it. You just need to seal it, put it away, and sell your chametz. Crumbs that are inedible by a dog, even if they're bigger than 30 grams, are not considered food, and therefore not chametz. And number four, chametz which is less than a kazayas, less than 30 grams, but are inedible to a human being, don't need to be checked. Don't need to be disposed of. So here's what we're looking for when we go around our home to clean for Pesach. Only exposed chametz, only crumbs of edible chametz, and if it's bigger than a kazayas, only crumbs that would be edible to a dog. That's all you're looking for in your home. So therefore, now start to think about the net result of what we've just said. Let's walk around our house. If you have particular closets in your home where you know no chametz is, you don't have to clean the closet. The drawers of every dresser in your home, unless you store macaroni in those dressers, you don't need to start emptying every shelf, every dresser drawer, every closet, the linen closet. I mean, unless you sneak the Entenmann's in the linen closet because you don't want your spouse to find out, you don't need to empty the linen closet. If you don't put chametz in the linen closet, why are you cleaning out your linen closet? You're doing a spring cleaning. You're not getting ready for Pesach. So go around your whole home. Certainly there's no ceiling fans and crawl spaces, there's no moving major appliances, there's no getting on hands and knees and scrubbing grout or cracks and crevices and floors. None of that is for Pesach. But moreover, closets, dressers, armoires, all of these areas where chametz is not brought, you do not need to empty, clean, and so on and so forth. What do you need to clean? You need to clean where you suspect chametz is gone. So again, if you have children, your job is much greater than if you don't have young children. If you have young children, to a certain extent, all bets are off. Chametz can appear anywhere. So you move the bed out. But again, I could get each of my kids' rooms ready for Pesach in 4 minutes. Right? I mean, I just open the dresser drawers. There's no chametz. Okay, I just move the bed a little bit. I see there's no chametz. I flip through. I go through the pockets hanging in the closet for a minute. There's no chametz. Their room is ready. The idea of, you know, beginning Hanukkah time, I'm starting with my oldest daughter's room. That's what I'm working on this week. Right? That's what I hear from women all the time. I'm working on this child's room this week. Working on their room that week, that's not Pesach. What does that have to do with Pesach? Working on their room should take 5 minutes. You shouldn't be emptying dresser drawers and closets and moving beds and mattresses. You vacuum the carpet, you quickly look through the dresser drawers, you go through the pockets of their clothing if they're a little kid, and the room is ready for Pesach. All your bedrooms took you 5 to 10 minutes each, right? Store spaces, places you're not accessing take you no time. So the rest of the home, other than the kitchen, we're talking a couple hours, maybe. Other than the kitchen, the rest of the house should take a maximum of a few hours to get ready for Pesach. Any questions about the house other than the kitchen? What? Candy. So again, so if your kids have a practice, which many kids do, that they're sneaking this, particularly after Purim, they're sneaking them everywhere, that's why you're doing a cursory glance of your kid's room. What? I understand. So you're looking through the dressers, my point is this. The image of emptying every dresser drawer, wiping it down, shaking out the clothing before you refold it and put it back. How did this develop? Because our kids are growing and we're trying to figure out which clothing they've grown out of, and we Salvation Army takes away. That has nothing to do with Pesach. If you go back to just what the basic law requires, how long would it take a room that is a huge room that has 10 dresser drawers? How long does it take to look through them to see if there's sweets in them? A few minutes? An hour for the room? How long could it possibly take? Other questions outside of the kitchen? Yes?
The linen closet. So, it's not directly related, but towels used in the kitchen for drying dishes and stuff like that, they get washed regularly.
No problem. Just throw them through the wash. To make a towel or a tablecloth, if it's not vinyl, but to make a towel or a tablecloth kosher for Pesach, all it needs is the washing machine. Pot holders, I would be more careful because pot holders often have caked on food, grease, that kind of thing. I would replace the pot holders. But before we get to the kitchen, let's stay with the rest. Unless everyone agrees, and that was the easiest it's ever been, if everybody buys that so quickly. Aliza. Garbage bins outside. Your garbage bins outside unlikely have edible food, on them. I don't think you need to start spraying them down and washing them out and cleaning them out. I think that whatever's in them falls into what we've relinquished ownership over, and if there's edible food, we sell it, and it's not our property, which is why, for example, Pesach this year is on a Friday night, but garbage is only picked up on Monday. So what are you going to do Friday morning with the rest of your chametz? You're going to put it in the garbage thing, and you're going to bring it out to the curb Friday morning, even though all the homeowners will be very upset at us, and we'll all get letters, it's fine, whatever. So by putting the garbage bag in the garbage bin and bringing it to the curb Friday morning, you say, I relinquish ownership. I've noticed, by the way, a truck that drives around on Wednesday night and Sunday night. I don't know if anyone else has seen this.
Yeah.
It's somewhat of a nebuch, but it turns out there are people who actually, people throw out metal, an old chair and all this. Mm-hmm. There are people who collect it all, melt it down, metals, valuable scraps. So to me, when I saw that, I was so happy because it confirms what we know halachically, which is once you put your garbage to the curb, you've relinquished ownership. I mean, how often do you see the next morning that half the garbage you put out is gone, but the garbage truck didn't come yet? People take what's the expression? One man's garbage is another person's treasure? Right? So we've relinquished ownership when it gets to the curb. So the same is true with all of garbage. Yes? Great question. So just to repeat the question, shaking out books, shaking out sheets from the linen closet. So again, I didn't talk about books. If you have a library in your home or near your bookcase, you'll often munch on a sandwich while you're reading a book, then you do need to check those shelves and look through the books and so on. But let's say you know with certainty, I happen to have I have a large collection of Sfarim. I wish I could tell you that I spent the year going through those books. But I know with certainty that 98% of those books were not opened in a year. I don't need to shake them out. I don't need to wipe them down. I don't need to look through them. The books that I know that I've read, the section of the shelves that I know I've gone through, that's what needs to be cleaned, but not the whole thing. Second question was, what about the atmosphere? Aren't we losing the feeling of getting ready for Pesach? So I have two responses. Number one is, even within what I'm saying, there's still an atmosphere of getting ready for Pesach. We still need to recruit our children to go through their rooms and to to vacuum the carpet and to clean the certain areas and to get the kitchen ready and to kosher and to, you know, in my parents' home growing up, there was a room in the basement, a section of the basement where we stored the chametz things, where the Pesach stuff was stored, and you exchange them. And again, you know, the memories I have are going up and down those basement stairs. The toaster's ready to go down, the box is ready to go down, Pesach stuff's ready to come up. Right? You almost, the last day of Pesach, you were desperate for Pesach to end, and you dreaded Pesach ending, because you knew that night how much work you had to do to swap it out. So, there still is a tremendous atmosphere, even within what I'm describing. But here's my response to you. Look at the atmosphere by making it spring cleaning instead of Pesach preparation. Look at what the atmosphere we've done. We've made children hate Pesach. Our children are growing up, and all they think of is men and women saying, I'm exhausted, I'm tired, it costs so much, the price gouging, the preparation, the this. Why would our children possibly want to keep Pesach? Why, when they grow up, would they ever look forward to Pesach? As opposed to showing them, kids, one Sunday, it's going to take us a few hours, then we're going to go out for ice cream, but we're going to get the whole house ready in a few hours. Isn't it beautiful? You know, Pesach's amazing. Let's sit around and share reflections on what freedom means so that we could get Divrei Torah ready for the Seder. Let's make my grandmother's best matzah ball recipe. Let's chop up the charoses and get the smells and the flavors and the feelings of Pesach in a way that we look forward and we love. You know, my grandmother making rolling those matzah balls, which I still taste in my mouth growing up, she didn't dread Pesach, she loved it. She didn't project a feeling of, I hate it and it's miserable and it's torturous and it's relentless and it's ruthless. And grandfather didn't talk about the price gouging in this store and that store, let's organize a boycott, let's this, let's that. I didn't hear those expressions growing up. I heard great joy. I saw my father lay out his kittel. I saw my father go find his notes for the Divrei Torah he likes to use at the Seder and prepare the Haggadah for a few minutes. So when you talk about the atmosphere, to me, that's exactly why I feel so strongly. Because our children are growing up with the opposite atmosphere of the misery and ruthlessness. They hate Pesach. We've got to put the excitement and the joy back in Pesach. Other questions outside the kitchen? We haven't even started the kitchen yet. Yes?
Okay. Just real quick, I love the example of the room. So if you have a closet that's marked gold,
right,
you find a bottle of whiskey. Is there any prohibition to opening up this cabinet marked gold and putting the whiskey in there and closing it?
No, you could do that.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. If you have, you find a bottle of whiskey outside under your kid's bed. First of all, call. So call right. You got bigger problems than chametz on Pesach. But you find a bottle of whiskey that you didn't find before Pesach. Can you open your whiskey cabinet, which you had put a piece of tape over, to put it in there and put it with everything else? The answer is you shouldn't do it on Yontif because it's muktzah. The chametz would be muktzah on Yontif. But Chol HaMoed, you can do it. What you should do is cover it. Cover it on Pesach, on Yontif itself.
But you can touch it.
You shouldn't touch it. It's muktzah on Yontif, but you could cover it, and then on Chol HaMoed you can put it away and seal it. Yes. Great question. So you have guests sleeping in someone else's home. They went away for Pesach. They made zero preparations. Your guests are going to be there. What do you need to do? So applying our principles, it depends which areas they're going to access. If your guests are just sleeping there, but they're not even looking at the kitchen, close the door to the kitchen and put a piece of tape over it, and their kitchen is now ready. Right, the kitchen is open. So again, the same kind of thing. Then go through the kitchen, sealing the cabinets, make sure the countertops, there's nothing overtly chametz on it. Right, cover the food processor. Just make it that there's no access to the kitchen. Tape the cabinets, tape everything. If
put a chair,
or you can put tape over the doorway. But let's say your guests are going to go in there because they have one bottle of water in the fridge with a cup in case they get thirsty. So you just seal up the kitchen other than that shelf of the fridge that they're going to access. The other rooms, they're only going to be using one or two of the rooms to sleep. The other rooms, just close the door, put a piece of tape over. And the room they're going to be going in to sleep, on Erev Pesach, look through that room and make sure that there's no chametz visible or accessible, which again, how long should it take? A couple minutes, maybe at most, I would think. Yes?
Go back to the garbage immediately. You said put it in the curb on Friday.
Yes.
So can you bring it back in before to see? Because you said the garbage can doesn't work.
Yeah, you can. Can you? So you take your garbage can out on Friday, can you bring the garbage can back in once the garbage is taken? The answer is yes. Your garbage can doesn't have any real chametz in it. whatever is in it is inedible by the standards of chametz. If you want to be strict, take a hose and wash down your garbage on Erev Pesach, and I think most of our garbages are A, either clean in the sense that garbage bags went in them, or whatever might have leaked or an animal took out is beyond disgusting. So, yes. Great, so in the bathrooms, I'm glad you bring that up. So at the end, when we go through ingredients and different objects, you have issues of concern with chametz. So those, when you go through your bathroom, you should take those and put them away somewhere sealed. So you take one cabinet of the bathroom where you put the things that are not to be used on Pesach, which we'll talk about in a moment. Let's say you have a deodorant or a perfume which you can't use on Pesach. Then you put them in the cabinet with a piece of tape over it and your bathroom is ready.
Toothbrush, toothpaste should be changed.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that at the end. Yes. Medicines in the bathroom that are not chametz but are opened, I would put them away also. You shouldn't have access to the things that you shouldn't be eating on Pesach. This often comes up, a break front. Do you have to put away chametz utensils that you can see through the glass of your break front? And the answer is no. Just seal the door to the break front. If you're going to be using other kosher for Pesach things in that break front, then you should put the chametz ones away, lest you make the mistake and confuse and take the wrong one. But if you have your break front, you have chametz china on display, chametz crystal or silver on display, just tape the break front. You don't have to cover it or remove it. Yes, Eliza. Yeah. The purpose of taping is not an absolute prohibition that, you know, you're going to turn into a pumpkin if you violate the tape. It's to remind you that you can't access it. So if you're going in there because you need to get one thing, then it would be permissible. Yeah, so also open shelving in your house that you display chametz things, I would put them away. And when you say chametz things, it's like things that are used for chametz, or it's things that you have out on your...
Like platters,
yeah, I'd put them away. Because usually that husband will end up serving something. You asked him for help, you were by the seventh meal, you're exhausted. He said, could you bring the chicken on a platter? And next thing, your chametz platter is going to come to the table. Better to put it away than to get divorced. Yeah. You don't have to go far, because remember, you have a lounge chair that you eat chametz, so that lounge chair has cracks and crevices. How far do you have to go? You don't have to start taking a toothpick and a toothbrush. If the chametz is less than 30 grams, which is a crumb, and it's inedible to a human, which if it's in the crack or crevice of your lounge chair, I hope it is, then you're not even obligated to search it out, says the Mishnah Berurah. So what you can do is you could take a cleaner that has a davar apogem. I don't know how you translate pogem. A bleach, something that makes it inedible. You spray it on the cracks and crevices. Now you've rendered whatever crumb might be there inedible by definition. 30 grams. It's the size of a big olive, but it's not a crumb. It's the last piece of the donut. Okay, let's get to the kitchen. Let's get to the kitchen because it's getting late. So the first thing to realize with the kitchen is, if you listen to what I've said, we've already taken care of half of your kitchen. Because it means that your blender, food processor, toaster, sandwich maker, hand blender, coffee maker, bread maker, yeah, you better have a big kitchen, but all of those appliances, now you get them ready for Pesach? Put them away. Next thing you do, this is my job in our kitchen, I love it. I walk around with my masking tape, and Yocheved shows me which cabinets she has no plan to access, and I say, honey, you ready for me to get it ready for Pesach? Put a piece of tape over it. If you're taking plates off the shelf and wiping it down and wiping every shelf, you're doing spring cleaning, you're not getting ready for Pesach. The cabinets of your kitchen, which you don't plan on using on Pesach, you prepare them by putting a piece of tape over them. That is all that's necessary. That's it. So again, is that half your kitchen, three quarters of your kitchen, a quarter of your kitchen? Depends on who you are. I think for most people, it's three quarters of your kitchen. It's a very small segment that you empty out to make room for Pesach dishes. So realize three quarters of your kitchen you've just prepared for Pesach by putting a piece of tape over the cabinet. Again, remember my theory. Your whole house should take a couple hours, and the kitchen with koshering, at most, a day to get ready. At most. because you've just taken care of 3/4 of the kitchen by putting masking tape over the cabinet. You've gotten rid of all of the appliances from the counters without cleaning them. You've put masking tape over the counters that you're not going to use. Most of your kitchen is now ready. You've not had to pull out the refrigerator or the oven. You're not pulling out any appliances. So in about 8 minutes, most of your kitchen is ready. Okay? Now let's talk about the rest of the kitchen. Let's start with countertops. Let's start with countertops. So it depends on what your countertop is made out of. In the CRC guide, if you were here and got a copy, if not, you can get it from the on the web. On page 15 of the CRC guide, they have a list of every kind of countertop ever known to man, whether it is can be koshered or not. If your countertop is made from granite or silestone or marble or omega or stainless steel, then all you need to do is pour boiling water over the surface of the countertop. What does that mean, pour boiling water? Taste is transferred into an object through heat, and taste is purged and removed from the object also, through heat. Depending how the taste was absorbed is the same way that we remove the taste. Sometimes taste is absorbed through heat, like in an oven. So you kosher an oven by heat. Sometimes it's through liquid. So you kosher through liquid. Countertops absorb taste by a liquid spilled, a pot overflowed, a wet spoon was put down. That's how a countertop was able to absorb chametz to begin with. So the same way it absorbed it is the way we purge it. The principle of the Talmud is kibolo kach polto. The way it absorbed is the way that it's purged. So how do you get it to purge? The same way a hot liquid poured on it is how it absorbed chametz. That's how we purge it. So you boil up water. Now how do you kosher? You can kosher in any pot that hasn't been used 24 hours. It could be a non-kosher pot. Could be a kosher pot. Could be kosher for Pesach. Could be not kosher for Pesach. Any clean pot that has not been used in 24 hours can be used to kosher. You boil water in it until what is called its mala ababuos. It is overflowing with bubbles. It's not just heated hot enough that you put the spaghetti in. It means that it's really bubbling. That's how hot it needs to get. You then take it and you pour it over the surface of the countertop, making sure to hit every spot of the countertop. Now, by definition, you can't pour directly because the moment you pour, that water is going to run. By definition, you can't hit every spot directly from the pot, but you do the best you can to use the pot to cover the different areas of the countertop. You know, again, I would caution you to be very careful. You're dealing with boiling water. Get long plastic gloves that go up even past your elbow. You assign different jobs. One person's pouring. You get a couple people who are right behind you with towels to mop it up right away before it runs off into your cabinets and so on and so forth. And that is the process. So if your countertop is made from one of those easy substances, stainless steel, granite, marble, limestone, and so on, then you pour boiling water, which is mala ababuos. You may have to heat a few pots at a time to get to all of your countertops. You should also make sure you're getting the backsplash, that when you hit and pour the water, it's not just getting the countertop, it's getting the backsplash as well. And that's how you prepare your countertops. Now, your countertops themselves, before they're koshered, should not be used with anything hot for 24 hours. So don't put anything hot down. It's probably better not to use them at all, lest you'll come to use something hot and have to restart your clock. But don't put anything hot on the counters for 24 hours before you kosher. So essentially, if you know you're koshering Tuesday, for 24 hours before, there's a moratorium on the counters. Tell your whole family, we're eating out tonight, or we're bringing in, but going to eat in the dining room. Don't use the counters for 24 hours. That's true for everything we're going to talk about koshering. The sink, the counter, the microwave, the oven. The oven depends on if it's self-clean, but don't use for 24 hours before koshering. What if you have a Formica countertop? Let me just cover countertops and then we'll take questions. Formica countertop. So there are different opinions about Formica. Some say you could kosher Formica the same way by pouring boiling water. Others say Formica has to be covered. I follow the opinion that says you can kosher Formica with boiling water as long as there are not serious cracks and crevices in the Formica where crumbs might be hiding. So if you have relatively smooth Formica, other than the seams, of course there are seams in the Formica, or in granite for that matter. If you have relatively smooth Formica, then I follow the opinion that you can kosher the Formica with boiling water. Some are strict to cover them as well, And, you know, tavo alav bracha, may you be blessed if you cover the stringency, but that's when it comes to for mica. But you have to make sure you're really koshering well, you know, pouring boiling water over the whole surface of the formica, including the black splashes, and that there are not serious cracks and crevices in the formica. What about wood? Some people have, let's say, in their island, a wood butcher block, is that what they call it? To be able to cut. So it depends. If the wood is entirely smooth, some suggest you can sand it down, get ready for Pesach. If the wood has cracks and crevices, which many or most wood does, then it should be covered and not koshered. If in theory you just redid your kitchen a month ago, so your wood is perfectly smooth and wonderful, you can kosher it with boiling water as well. But with wood I would be more careful to likely cover it.
What about using a steam cleaner?
Oh, so are there other ways to kosher the counter? Like a steam cleaner? So iron is one way, but the iron is very tedious and somewhat dangerous. But you'd have to have water over the surface of your counter and run a hot iron over the entire surface. It sounds to me... Well, we'll talk about the steam in a second, because that doesn't necessarily work. To run, some talk about you put water over the surface and then run the iron over the water. That would I would caution against that. It seems to me to be very, very dangerous. Yeah, you can kosher that way, but it's very dangerous, and I take... If you have a crack in the granite, you could also cover just the crack. Cover the crack, yeah. Now, can you use a steamer? Can you use a steamer? So industrial type of steamers, the steam that... when the steam exits the steamer, it has to be the heat of bubbling, boiling water. Granted, the steam is very hot and will make your clothing not wrinkled anymore, but in most of the private or steamers used for private purpose, the steam is not the requisite amount of heat it needs to be. Industrial type steamers, it is. So I've actually been looking for, because you know, somebody, we now have the kosher clock and the kosher toothbrush and the kosher for this and the kosher that. Someone would make a lot of money if they came out with a kosher for Pesach steamer, because we all make a mess of our home and burn our hands and everything. If you just had a steamer that you could run over your sink and your countertops, but to the best of my knowledge, it has not yet been released. And the ones I found at Bed Bath & Beyond and elsewhere, I'm not 100% confident. It's very possible that the steam is hot enough to be koshering the counters, but I'm not entirely confident that it is. It's not good enough, for sure. Yeah, for sure. Any questions yet also with the counters? Yeah, Melanie.
Did you say that a pot has to not be temperature 24 hours?
If it's a Pesach pot that you're koshering with, it can be, well, how would you be using it to cook within 24 hours if it's a Pesach pot? In other words, if you have a separate burner, you've been using that Pesach pot to cook, now you want to use that Pesach pot to kasher, you can. Yeah. Yes. If your backsplash is glass, you should cover it. Because we hold, Ashkenazim at least hold, that you can't kasher glass for Pesach. So if the backsplash is glass, you should cover it. Sfaradim hold that you can kasher glass for Pesach. Yeah. No, if you're covering, it's not necessary. Yes. Shelves and we'll get to shelves. Let's just stick with the countertops. Any other countertop questions?
How do you clean, like, the seam? The granite's in, you know, in pieces, so there's a seam.
The seam is sealed technically, so you kosher it the same way you do everything else.
Clean it.
You don't have to, right? If you want to spray again a bleach cleaner with a Dover Pogame with a, I can't translate the word Pogame. Something that, yeah, acidic or an edible, but then you're making sure that you're nullifying anything that might be in it. Countertops. Any other countertop questions? Yes.
So as you're pouring,
yeah.
Is there an amount of time?
No. As soon as the water hits the counter, it's kosher.
You have to presumably you're boiling to make sure that it's
right. No, you know, I just koshered someone in the house who moved last week. You're boiling the pot. When you remove it from the fire, it's bubbling over, and you're just walking around the kitchen and you're splashing it over your counters with a team of people behind you with towels, hopefully, who are mopping it up, and you're splashing over the counter to try to get all the parts of the counter. And that's how you're koshering it. If someone's got to invent a steamer, it would save a lot of aggravation. What? You could use a teapot, If it heats the water to the point that it's boiling. You could also use, for example, we have in our house, we don't have an Instahot with our sink, so we have, they sell it, it's a pot that sits on a base. When you press it down in a very short time, it gets it to the point that it's really bubbling. You could take that and pour it over the surface also. It'll be a lot cleaner. The Instahot doesn't get hot enough. The Instahot's not hot enough. No. Yeah. Yeah, but it's really, I mean, that electric kettle, if you open the top and look at it, when it tells you your coffee is, it's bubbling. Yeah, yeah. Countertops, yes. Yeah, it's a mistake. You don't have to.
Okay.
You don't have to. Okay, let's move. Let's not move on yet. Yes, Mimi.
Is there a petition or something that would be a good way to get backsplash? I have backsplash and it's the same thing
under the You don't need to do it all the way up till under the counter. Why do we kosher a backsplash? Because the fear is that your pot that you are making your kinei lachin, you at one point it touched the backsplash. And now, so your backsplash has absorbed chametz taste. And now you're going to be making your kosher for Pesach knedels. And that pot's going to touch the backsplash. It's going to absorb that taste. You're going to have a problem. That's why we're covering the backsplash. But any area over where a pot could hit of the backsplash, you don't have to worry about koshering. Because it's not even possible that you're going to get... It could have, but even... What's the worst case scenario? It's not going to splash again and come back into your food. You don't have to start worrying about that. You have to worry about the backsplash where your chametz, your Pesach pot may touch. So that, you splash boiling water on it. Splash boiling water, that's the way. Yes? Tile with grout should be covered because tile ceramic cannot be kashered. If you have a ceramic countertop, it needs to be covered. Yes? Okay, microwave. Let's talk about the microwave. Let's talk about the cabinets. The cabinet that you're using for Pesach, meaning if you're not using a Pesach, we already said all you need to do is put a piece of tape. But a cabinet that you're using for Pesach, you empty it out, you wipe it down, and the min of the custom has always been to line it. So line it. Strictly speaking, do you need to line it? No. But the custom is, that's what you saw your babas and zaydas do and our mamas and papas, and so line it. But lining it, again, let me just say this though. You don't need to start with a scissors and scotch tape, putting the paper towel enough to hit every corner of the shell. You're not lining it. You're lining it symbolically because it's nice to line it before you put your Pesach plate on the same counter that your chametz plate's at. But you put the paper towel down, so you're basically lining it. Do you have to cover every corner of the shelf? No. You use paper towels. Same thing in drawers. Yeah, wipe it down carefully, wipe it down cleanly, spray it with whatever will be pogame it, and then put a paper towel down, and you're good to go. That's any other cabinet questions? Yes?
You have a kosher Pesach pad, and you clean it up pretty well when you put back those Pesach dishes the year before. You don't have to start cleaning, right? It's always kosher Pesach.
Why do you have to clean it at all?
I didn't, but I mean, when I put it back...
No.
No,
don't worry about it. That's good. You're good. Microwaves. Any other cabinet questions? Microwaves. So if the microwave has a glass plate, if you're Ashkenazi, you have to remove the glass plate and seal it up because we paskin you can't kosher glass. How do you kosher a microwave? So again, the same method that the microwave absorbs taste is how you get it out. In a microwave, it absorbs taste through steam. So steam is how you get it out. How do you produce steam in a microwave? Very easily. So you clean the microwave, leave it for 24 hours without using it, then you put styrofoam or microwave safe cup or bowl with water.
Don't use styrofoam because when it gets
it melts.
Yeah.
It could melt. Okay. Well, of course you have a problem because it has to be, it wasn't used in 24 hours. Kosher of Pesach. I would use something disposable that's microwavable and put it in long enough to 8 minutes, 10 minutes, certainly long enough for it to heat the water that it produces steam throughout the microwave. You then need to fill the thing and put it in a second time because you need to kosher the spot where the cup or the bowl was. So you do that twice. And that's how you kosher your microwave.
Do you have a stainless steel interior?
No. Any interior. Yes? Now, if the inside of the microwave has a fan area with a grate on top, you have to clean it very carefully. If it's hard to get in there and clean carefully, spray a bleach spray, something which has a Dover Pogame, which I'll wake up in the middle of the night tonight and think of a good translation for. So again, clean the microwave. Don't use it 24 hours, and then heat water up. Now, when you open the door after you've boiled the water in the microwave, be very, very careful. I've never heard firsthand, but I've read on the internet incidents of the water exploding out after you boil water in a microwave. They talk about if you ever heat coffee in a microwave. So be very careful when you open the door after you boil the water in the microwave. Boil it twice to hit the same spot that you got the first time, and your microwave is good to go. Hinda. Yes. 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 Drinking glasses, even if drinking glasses, I'll go on this tangent for you for 1 second. If drinking glasses, you never had anything hot in them, nor were they washed with chametz utensils in a dishwasher, let's say. So drinking glasses, Ashkenazim would say you can kasher in the following very bizarre method. If you have drinking glasses that you never had any hot chametz in, nor did you wash them with chametz, so that those glasses... Your year-round drinking glasses, if they ran through your dish... So then it's a problem. You can't kasher them for Pesach.
Yeah, but the problem... My question really is... My problem isn't really about the drinking glasses. I just can understand why you can't take your glass tray in the microwave and kasher that for 3 days.
Because Ashkenazim say any glass which was used with hot chametz can't be kashered for Pesach. Yeah, but often it lifts out. It should. Yeah, ours does also. So what? The plates on tilt when you're eating the food, that's all.
Well, you know, you can get the replacement ones and just
eat it for. Yeah, but it's aside from that. We have the same problem. We take the glass plate out, and that knob in the middle that rotates it is still sitting there. So you heat the food on an angle. You don't fill it to the very top. You heat it on an angle, that's all. And it doesn't rotate. You can live with that for Pesach. Hinda, any glass that comes in contact with hot chametz, Ashkenazim believe that it absorbs taste but can't be purged of it.
Okay, so much kashering some other glassware now that, you know, like wine decanters, I've never said in the dishwasher.
Right. And some, so you fill that with water to sit 24 hours three times in a row.
But that's okay.
Yeah, not a problem. Okay. Not a problem. Yeah, Mimi. Yeah, the glass door of the microwave is the age-old question, but for some reason everybody's lenient with that anyway. I don't know what to tell you. Every microwave has a glass door. What? It might be, but maybe the difference is the glass plate, sometimes the food has direct contact, the glass door it never does. It's just the steam. Yeah. It's a good question, but all the kosher agencies say you could kosher it nonetheless. Yeah, microwaves. Shh. Yes. No. The way to kosher the metal tray in the microwave is to pour boiling water over it. Remove it from the microwave and pour boiling water over it. There are, believe it or not, there are microwaves that have a metal grate or a metal tray. Yeah. Yes. Just put a piece of tape over it. Good to go. Okay, let's move on to the ovens. What? Shh, shh, shh. Yeah.
Is the Keurig coffee maker?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about ovens. Yes. Okay, we'll get to it. Hold on. Let me. Only questions after I talk about the ovens. Ovens. Is oven question? Yes.
That has to be removed.
Right.
Then can you use it without the glass tray?
Yeah, you have to kosher it, but then you could use it.
You can kosher the glass tray.
No. Remove the glass tray and then kosher the microwave and use it.
So then can you use it? How do you use it without the glass tray?
You put the food in and it sits on a wobbly way. It sits wobbly. Yeah, just be careful with it. Ovens. If you have a self-clean oven, you do not need to wait 24 hours. All you need to do is run the self-clean cycle. Now, I know there's different lenses. You do not even need to clean it. You should clean it. You should clean it. But the self-clean raises it to a level of heat that obliterates anything that's in it. So, you could keep the racks inside, it kashers the racks. In fact, if you put a wooden spoon in your self-clean oven and ran the self-clean, you'd find a pile of ash on the bottom of the self-clean afterwards. That's how hot it gets. So self-clean oven, run it for a cycle. Some people say, but my self-clean is automatically shutting off after 2 hours, not 4 hours. It's okay. Run it for as long as you can, a cycle, and then it's kosher. Even without waiting the 24 hours. What?
What's a normal cycle?
Does it have a cycle? I don't. Is it, how is it? 3 hours. So a 3 hour cycle. Till your kitchen smells. That's a cycle. Yeah. So if you have a self-clean oven, run the self-clean. Hold the question. Let me just finish with ovens and yes. If you have a self-clean oven, run the self-clean cycle. You're ready to go. If you do not have a self-clean oven, clean by. It's good. Run the self-clean. I'm sorry. If you do not have a self-clean oven, clean the oven. Leave it for 24 hours. Then leave it on the highest setting for an hour. If you do not have a self-clean oven, then clean the oven, leave it 24 hours, and run it on the highest setting for a minimum of an hour. If you have a convection oven, treat it like an oven. Clean it, don't use it 24 hours, and leave it on the highest setting for an hour. The door of the self-clean oven is cleaned. It's cleaning it to the point that it's... Yeah. Yes. Oven questions.
Shh.
Right.
And it's hundreds of dollars to fix it.
Just clean it. Don't use it 24 hours, leaving it on the highest setting for an hour. Just treat it as a non-self-cleaning oven. Yes, Cinda.
Okay, so the racks that are in the oven, you know, if you leave them in a self-cleaning cycle, after one or two times of doing that, the silver comes right off.
Right. Yeah, Shvetz is Ein Yid. It's the cost of being a Jew. Yeah, if you don't want your racks to be destroyed, you could kasher the racks separately to not be exposed to the same level of heat.
I can do that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yes. Other oven questions? Yes. And yeah. You running a self-clean?
Yeah.
So then that you're fine. Yeah, it's essentially a stain. By the way, Mimi, you could ask the same thing. The door of the oven is glass. And yet, everyone says you could kosher ovens. Somehow it works. Yes. Deborah. Warming draw. Okay, let's talk about the warming draw. First the oven, Shoshana. You self-cleaned your oven, you do not have to put tinfoil. Correct. Correct. You don't have to put tinfoil also, you've kashered. No. In the oven, it's not necessary. Grab.
The little space, like underneath the oven.
That you should, again, if you normally... Yeah, you clean it out, or spray it, but yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Is it necessary to take the glass top of your stove?
No, we're not up to that yet. Hold on. Warming drawers. Warming drawers. So a warming drawer can be kashered. Some agencies will tell you it can't, but it can be kashered. Yeah, you clean the warming drawer. Don't use it 24 hours. In order to get hot enough to clean it, the setting of the warming drawer can't get it hot enough. So if you buy a sterno, like what you use to keep food hot, light a sterno in the warming drawer, leave it open a crack so air can escape, leave it there for an hour, and your warming drawer is kashered. What? If you don't use it, put a piece of tape over it. You're ready to go. I got that, by the way, from the CRC guide. CRC makes that suggestion. I'll read to you their words. CRC says, warming draw. Heat the warming draw to the required temperatures to light one can of the type of canned fuel used to heat chafing dishes. Make sure to leave the door of the warming drawer slightly ajar. Be enough air to allow for combustion. One of the 7 to 8 ounce size cans should be adequate to heat an average size warming drawer for about 2 hours. As with all koshering, before you begin, the warming drawer must be thoroughly cleaned and not used for 24 hours.
Okay.
That's from the CRC's guide. You can download it from the internet.
Okay.
That was on page 50.
The
questions and answers. Okay, that's ovens and warming drawers. We've done, let's talk about sinks. Yes. It's okay. We're not up to platas, but we'll go to platas now for a second. Let's do the ranges before we get to platas. We did the bottom of the oven, let's do the top of the oven. You know what? Let me make my way through the rest of the kitchen and then ask the questions.
Yeah.
The top of the oven. So if you have a gas range, then clean the whole area well. Leave each of the burners on the highest setting for 15 minutes, not all at the same time, because the heat it will build up will be unbearable, and your range is now kosher, and cover the area with tinfoil, everything other than the range, and put drip pans under the gas, the grates. I don't know if that was clear. If you have grates of a gas range, leave each of the burners on high for 15 minutes, and put tinfoil or drip pans under the grates, and cover with silver foil the areas in between the grates. If you have an electric stove, also cover all of the areas in between the electric coils. Leave each of the coils on high long enough till they glow red, and your stovetop is ready. Turn it on high, and by 10 minutes, it's certainly, 15 minutes, it should certainly glow red. The last is the glass top, which has been changing through the years, but I'm proud to tell you that kosher agencies have now come around to what we've been saying for a few years here. Absolutely do not build any teepees. We debunked that a few years ago. Don't do that. All you need to do is the following. You come back to the age-old issue of kosher and glass. So the answer is, leave each of the burners on high till you see them glow, and you can't cover the areas in between because your glass is going to break. So what you should do is either put trivets down there, or make sure you do something, make yourself a sign, not to put anything in between the burners over Pesach. So that you shouldn't move the pot to the area on the glass in between the burners, you shouldn't put a spoon down in between the burners, put trivets in between the burners, metal trivets in a way that will remind you or that will prevent you from putting anything down there. So you're koshering each of the glass areas by leaving them on high, and then you're being careful not to put anything in between them and the areas on the glass. Yes? It also, so I suggest a third thing, which when I spoke to a big post, like you told me, it's unnecessary, but I always suggest, which is pour boiling water over the surface of all of the glass, because even though we Ashkenazim are strict, but at least there is an opinion that you're really koshering beyond that area. So the agencies all say, even if the pot is bigger than the area of the burner, the pot is heated by the burner so hot that that glass also you can consider kosher. Like the oven door. Okay, questions about stovetops? Yes? Where? In between the burners? If it's on the burner itself and the burner has been lit so high that it's glowing red, then it's koshered, even if there's a stain there. If it's the areas in between the burners, chipped glass also is fine. But if the areas in between the burners, then you shouldn't be putting anything there anyway, so you'll be okay. Yes. Yeah. Kosher for Pesach trivets, yeah.
Exactly. And then questioning, who said you could do that?
You say Rabbi Goldberg. If they say that's not good enough, you could tell them Rabbi Sabalovsky, who's a Rosh Hashiva in YU, I spoke to about this. The CRC is essentially saying this today. Star K. Everybody's stuck because there's no easy answer. And nobody's willing to say you can't kosher the glass top stove. Yes? Right. Cover with tinfoil. Cover with tinfoil. What about a blech? Can a blech be koshered? Like a metal blech that you put over the gas top?
Yeah.
So we do not kosher a blech for Pesach. What about a hot plate? A plata. So the answer is yes. What you should do is clean it well. Don't use it 24 hours. Plug it in and leave it. There is no high, it's on, there's no adjustable for an hour. And I recommend covering it with heavy duty tin foil as well. So you can use the same hot plate that you use year round. Clean it, plug it in, leave it on for an hour, and cover it with heavy tin foil. Don't cover the handle. Yeah, where the rubber is, the cord are. Just be careful. Okay. Cover. Heat it and cover. Okay. Electric block. But yeah, the only way to use it basically clean it. Thoroughly cover the top with a thick layer of aluminum, pouring in food. Okay.
Are you covering it while it's heating for the hour?
No. Just cover it.
First,
cover it separately. Cover. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, put metal drip pans there. They make those like round metal drip pans. Cover it. Are you talking about the electric coil? You may be able to lift the whole top of the oven. The whole... No, you do your best to... Yeah, you could, but you could probably lift the whole top of the oven and clean under there. If you can, you do your best. You spray something in there and you put metal, you cover it with aluminum foil. What? No. Okay, what else is left in the kitchen? With sinks. We didn't talk about sinks. What do you mean? Yeah, so the vents underneath the microwave, that's a good point, where the steam goes up when you're cooking on your oven. You should also kosher. It's kind of hard to pour boiling water up there. But you clean it well and spray it with Windex and splash boiling water to the best of your ability under there also. Let's talk about sinks. If you have a stainless steel sink, then you clean the sink surface area and faucet well. Don't use it for anything particularly hot for 24 hours. And then you pour boiling water over the surface. So when you're cleaning it, when you're koshering the counters, you pour boiling water over the surface of the sinks as well, and over the handle and over the faucet. Also turn the faucet upside down, assuming it's adjustable, it comes out, the coil, pour boiling water over all of that. Turn it upside down, pour it over the spout as well. The CRC recommends that the filter at the drain of your sink should be replaced for Pesach. If the filter is all metal, it can be kashered by pouring boiling water over it also. Just clean it very carefully. If it's a filter that you can't clean carefully, they're a few cents at Home Depot, replace it. That's if it's stainless steel. If your sink is ceramic or something else other than stainless steel, it can't be kashered. You need to put a basin. So you're buying essentially a rubber tub with a hole in the bottom so the water can escape, and you're lining your sink. You need to buy a sink liner.
Talking about stainless steel, you have a stainless steel sink and you have a stainless steel rack that sits in the sink.
Yeah.
Stainless steel racks that you
have. Yeah, pouring the boiling water over them. Yes. Even the rubber feet, yeah, we paskin you could kosher rubber or plastic if it's a hard plastic or rubber. Yeah.
But that's so hard, I could kosher it.
You could put it in water or you could pour boiling water over it. Yes. You can't kosher it, so what you do is you put a like rubber basin in it with a hole, and then you using it like a sink liner, so you're putting your dishes in there, washing your dishes in there. And the sink you can't do anything to, right? Right. Yeah, you clean it, which is it should be pretty clean. Yes. Right. You could kosher. Yeah, we follow the opinion you could kosher hard plastic. Okay, yes. Okay, what do you want to talk about? Well, we'll get up to that. We'll get up to that when we talk about different substances. Let's talk about a hot water urn.
Yeah.
A hot water urn which is never brought to the table and never washed with chametz dishes. So your hot water urn that you heat water for Shabbos every week and then you just empty the water and put it away till the next week is perfectly fine for Pesach as well. If you're cleaning it with hot water with a sponge which has chametz, then you got a problem. But it's never so hot, less than 120 degrees, then it's okay. Yeah, then it's okay. Then you can't use it. Then it's chametz. Then you need another urn.
When you use it on yantav and you're not using kosheni, so you're putting water into the mug with the tea.
Still, right? We still follow that it does not go up; it only goes down, and therefore you're okay. Yeah, but you don't need to. The hot water urn, if you look, they have it here on page... Yeah, here, the bottom of page 50, the left column. He says the following, Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz, the Av Beis Din of the CRC, if it's a type of urn which is not brought to the table, never used for anything but heating hot water, not washed with chametz items, it can be used for Pesach without kashering. Small enough to bring to the table, or is used to heat other beverages, you ever warm challah or food on top of it for Shabbos, or you clean it with vinegar, or with chametz dishes, then it should not be used for Pesach without kosher. Okay, that's the hot water urn, yes. Yeah, but you're then going to kosher it. No, the item is clean and you're going to kosher it, so it's not a problem. Yeah. Because your item is chametz until it's koshered. So you're okay. What do we leave out in the sink? In the kitchen, the refrigerator and the dishwasher. Let's talk about the if you have an insti hot on your sink, yeah, but you should pour boiling water over the spout of it as well. Yeah, that's why you pour boiling water over the spout. The refrigerator should be emptied and cleaned carefully. Here's an area which I've minimized the time it takes, but here's an area where I will say it legitimately takes time, because even the accordion door of the refrigerator, you have to go through somewhat carefully. Again, you don't have to go crazy, but you have to go through somewhat carefully. This refrigerator should be emptied and wiped down and cleaned carefully, all the areas. The shelves, it used to be they said you have to line them. Today they say you don't have to line them. If you do line them, you should be careful to perforate whatever you're lining them with so that the air can flow throughout the refrigerator. We don't line our shelves in the refrigerator anymore. We just wash them very carefully. Also, if you want to line it, tavo aleihem bracha, beautiful. It's a beautiful thing to do. But be careful to perforate whatever you're lining it with. But be careful to clean it very, very well. Because the air needs to flow throughout your refrigerator. If the air is stifled, your refrigerator will break.
What about glass shelves?
Glass shelves, you don't have to perforate. The air is not coming through anyway. But you should
cover them?
You don't have to cover anything if you cleaned it very, very carefully. But if you want to put paper towel down to remember it's Pesach when you open the fridge, in case the Pesach ketchup doesn't remind you, then you can then you can put down the... Okay, dishwashers. Freezer is the same thing. You should unplug and allow your freezer to defrost, because the frost buildup on your freezer may have chametz caked in. If it's not for us, you don't have to. Just clean it very well.
You have to empty the ice bucket.
I don't think so, unless you store donuts there. It's good. Good to go. Yeah, that's a great question. Let's say you have a second refrigerator in your garage. So you're going to store things in that refrigerator, but you only need one shelf. Or you want to put one shelf of your garage refrigerator, all the chametz things. So you can do that, and you just have to cover the front of it. So you take paper towels, a tin foil down the front of it, and as long as you cover, have no access to that shelf, you can dedicate one shelf to remain chametz.
One more question.
Yes.
Indoor water and ice dispenser that you yes. put your chametz not, glass cup against. Is it
the hot water or just cold water?
Cold
no,
water.
Just clean it well and it's fine. Okay, dishwasher. Dishwasher, I hate, is my least favorite question of all of Pesach. I don't know what to tell you exactly. I recommend not koshering dishwashers for Pesach. Dishwasher is very, very complicated. The filter, the cracks and crevices, there are parts of it which are not entirely kosherable. So there are agencies which say that if your dishwasher is stainless steel and your racks do not have cracks and crevices and you've disassembled the filter on the bottom to clean it very well, then you could kosher it by running it three consecutive cycles. And certainly that's a legitimate opinion, and if you want to follow it, beautiful, no problem, I'll even eat in your house. But my recommendation is that it's very, very challenging. It's good to remember 1 week a year what it's like to not have a dishwasher. What can I tell you? That's my recommendation. What? Oh, so we're not up to paper goods? Anything else yet with the kitchen? Barbecue? This year is a good time to kosher a barbecue because you have a lot of chol hamoed, so you can have a good barbecue. If you want to kosher a barbecue, the grates need what's called libun gamur. the grates would need to be heated to the point of like a blowtorch. So either you have to put a blowtorch to the grates of your barbecue, or alternatively you could put the grates of your barbecue in your self-cleaning oven when you run the self-clean cycle. It may ruin the surface of the grates. So you could put them in the in your self-cleaning oven at your own risk. I don't take responsibility for the... It could ruin the surface or discolor it. And the rest of the oven is koshered by turning it on, cleaning it well, which is not an easy thing to say when it comes to a barbecue, and covering, turning the cover down and leaving it on the highest setting for an hour. What? Because the grates come in direct contact, so they need what's called libun gamur. The rest of the barbecue needs libun kal. You could achieve libun kal by covering it, leaving the heat build up. But libun gamur is to heat it to the point that it would singe a piece of paper. That you can't achieve by closing the cover. You'd only be able to achieve through a blowtorch or self-clean. It's also complicated because it assumes that you can clean the barbecue very well, which that could take you a good 2 days to do. So you might be better off buying a disposable hibachi for your Pesach or George Foreman grill just for Pesach, or a Pesach grill pan, that's what we have, that you can make on your stove, you know, hamburgers and hot dogs and steak. Those are better, easier alternatives. Yes? Yeah. Still not hot enough. It's not Libun Gamur. It's Libun Kal, that's why it takes care of the rest of it, but not Libun Gamur. Okay, I think we're done with the kitchen. We talked about the rest of the house, we talked about the kitchen almost. Yeah. Yeah. So the only way to kosher a super big pot is to boil water, clean it, don't use it 24 hours, boil water in it, then heat a stone on your stove with tongs, drop the hot stone in until the water bubbles over the whole sides of it and we'll kosher. Buy a new pot. Buy a new pot. Okay, our last area of discussion is the... shopping guide, the question of what you could buy. So let's start that area with cosmetics and medicines. And here again, I point out every year, and it's not me, who am I? I'm a nobody, but the CRC and the OU and the Star K. Turn to page 41 if you have the CRC guide, and you will see the CRC's guidelines are as follows. Remember one of our rules of chametz. The term chametz only applies to food that's edible. If it is inedible, it is by definition not chametz. So, pills are by... if you don't have this guide, you can download it on their website. crcweb.org, or as I recommended, if you have the CRC app for your iPhone or Android, it's got a Pesach guide, it's fantastic. So, pills, medicine, is not food. That's why you're allowed to swallow it on Yom Kippur or Tisha B'Av. It's not food. Pills do not need to be checked whether they're chametz. If you're on medicine, it is by definition, you could take it on Pesach. Vitamins, we don't say the same thing. Depends. If you're taking the vitamins in a medicinal capacity, then you could continue to take them. If you're taking the vitamins because, hey, it's good to take a little vitamin C every day, then you should have kosher for Pesach vitamins or not take them for that 1 week. That's true when it comes to medicines. Any questions about medicines?
So when you say medicine, I mean, if the doctor says you should be...
doctor says you need to take that vitamin, it's like a medicine for you, then continue to take it.
Okay.
That's when it comes to medicines. Liquid medicines, flavored medicines, do have the status of a food, so it would depend on the level of your illness. If you have any specific questions, I'm happy to answer them. Toiletries. And here's again, when I was a kid, people walked around with, I won't mention which rabbi, Olav HaShalom Zechron Zecher Tzadik Levracha's book, up and down the aisles of the supermarket, checking exactly the cosmetics. It's unnecessary, we'll put it kindly. It's unnecessary. If it's inedible, it is therefore by definition not a Pesach problem. What are examples of inedible? So, examples of inedible: blush, body soap, cream, eyeshadow, eyeliner, face powder, foot powder, ink, lotions, mascara, nail polish, ointments, shampoo, stick deodorants are all by definition fine for Pesach. It is. When is the last time you took a bite out of your stick deodorant? When is the last time you took a bite out of your soap or drank some of your delicious shampoo? All of those, no, but even all of those things are by definition inedible. It's the opening insert on the CRC's guide. By the way, they have this. And in case you think that this is just the modern Orthodox CRC, signed on to this is none other than Rabbi Shmuel First, Shlita, the Dayan of the Aguda of Illinois, cousin of our beloved Harold First. So he too signs on to the standard. This is an Aguda standard that all cosmetics and toiletries which are inedible are by definition good. So any bar of soap, any shampoo, any cream, any eyeshadow, eyeliner, face powder, foot powder, mascara, nail polish, ointment, shampoo, stick deodorant is by definition good for Pesach. Doesn't need to be new. It could be old. It doesn't need to be new. Now, liquids. So liquid deodorant, hairspray, perfume, cologne, shaving lotions, if they have what's called denatured alcohol, might be a problem. It's a machlokas aposkim. According to many, even those liquids are inedible, and therefore it's not a problem. However, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva. The denatured alcohol could be converted into our edible alcohol, and therefore it has the status of chametz, even though at that point it's inedible. Plus, I would add to it, you may remember Kitty Dukakis, who was such an alcoholic, she would drink her perfume when she was denied access to alcohol. So alcoholics who are desperate will drink perfume or cologne or a liquid deodorant for the alcohol that's in it. So therefore, liquid deodorants, hairsprays, perfumes, and colognes should not be used for Pesach unless they're on the chametz-free list. You could get that for chametz-free list partially through the CRC, more notably on the StarK's website. Lipstick, mouthwash, and toothpaste which contain chametz should not be used. Most lipsticks do not contain chametz. You do not need to buy a new one. Just take off the end of the one that you were using. I don't know how you, whatever. Wipe it with a tissue, cut it with a knife, whatever you do to get rid of the end of your lipstick. That's in terms of that. Milk. Let's talk about milk. Milk, it's preferable to use a milk which is kosher for Pesach. There are not a lot of them. So one of the things you can do is buy milk or eggs before Pesach. So when you're going shopping, milk or eggs that are not kosher for Pesach are permissible, but only before Pesach. You say, why before Pesach? It has to do with the rules of bittul nullification that we rely on only before Pesach, but not on Pesach. So therefore, you buy enough milk or eggs on Erev Pesach that you'll need to get through the week. If you need more milk on Pesach because you ran out, go to kosher marketplace or a kosher store, which will have had the milk from before, or is Chalav Yisrael, or has kosher for Pesach milk. But if you're getting regular milk or eggs, then get enough before Pesach that can last all the way through. That's in terms of milk. The same is true, I believe, with lactose milk. What doesn't make sense? Right, because you're relying on rules of nullification. We believe that chametz is batel before Pesach, but not on Pesach. So therefore, there's certain leniencies having... Correct. Eggs also. Both of them. About milk, yes. Soy milk, so if you look on page 39 of the CRC guide, you're in luck because you're Sephardic. So most soy and almond milks have just kitnios, no chametz. So if it's on this list that says it's chametz free but has kitnios, you could use it. Ashkenazim are strict with kitnios, cannot use soy or almond milk that has kitnios. But let's say you have a child who won't drink anything else and you need to, someone's sick and they need the calcium. Then if they're allowed to drink kitnios, then they'd be allowed to drink the almond or soy milks that are chametz free. Most almond milks contain kitnios. It's just a part of their ingredients. Powdered milk also, I think, needs to be... actually, I'm not sure about powdered milk. Let me see. I don't know. I don't know about powdered milk. I'm not sure about powdered milk. Yes. No good. No good. No good. It needs to be kosher for Pesach. Now, what about, someone asked before, about, what were we talking about? Paper goods. Thank you. So the CRC's position, which I think is, as I say, I always find them to be the most reasonable, is that all styrofoam is fine and kosher for Pesach. Paper goods are all kosher for Pesach. But paper goods, you should not heat food on Pesach, they say, because I think that they can have a kitnios on them. Paper products, including bags, napkins, plates, and wax paper, are all fine. Paper plates should not be used with hot foods unless specifically certified for Pesach. That's the position of the CRC. Plastic is all fine as well. Plastic is all fine. Styrofoam is all fine. Paper is all fine. That's why you shouldn't use it with hot food. Which ones? I don't know about that. Okay. I believe you. I don't. Is that true? They have that paper products, paper plates, shouldn't be used with hot foods unless specifically kosher for Pesach. Cornstarch on it, which is why you shouldn't use it with hot food because of the kidneyos aspect. Yeah? Okay. Okay, that could be. Yeah, yeah. Given that it's Friday night, there's really nothing that I can think of. Yeah, you can't cook on Friday night, so all of your food for the Seder needs to be prepared beforehand. Okay. You can't check your romaine lettuce, so you have to check that before. That's true for Yontif as well. Salt water, I don't know why you wouldn't be able to make it on Pesach. Mixing salt and water, maybe it's, I don't know. It could be. Yeah, I'm not sure. But all of the food that you're cooking has to be cooked in advance because obviously you can't cook on the night of the Seder because it's Friday night. But just coming back to some of the products. The other questions I offer, is it about milk? Plates, yeah. That's what the CRC guide says. Yeah, that the paper plates shouldn't be used. Okay, there you have it. The Dixie products, the OU guide says, are fine. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the CRC is mentioning that unless you know that it's okay for Pesach, don't serve hot food on paper plates. And for a list of which ones are okay, the OU guide has a list of which ones are okay. The other question I get every year is about salmon at Costco. So I made a preemptive call today. So salmon at Costco is the following. If it's not cut at Costco, in other words, Costco sells brands of cut up salmon which is produced elsewhere, they're fine for Pesach. Wash them off before you cook them, but they're fine for Pesach. Cut up salmon at Costco is a problem. Because frozen kind. Yeah, frozen or even fresh. If they have bagged fresh salmon that is from a distributor, it's fine, even without a special kosher for Pesach, like Kirkland. Because they're not making it in the Costco. When I say making it in the Costco, it means to say that in their fish department, they're not very careful about the oils from the kosher fish and the non-fish and the chametz and the non-chametz, even the sandwich while they're cutting the fish. So if it's produced fresh there, it's a problem. But in the facility where it's made in mass, where they are much more careful to segregate, then it's perfectly fine. So let's say the Kirkland brand Costco salmon at Costco is fine.
Fresh or frozen?
Either. It's also fine. If there's no egg... Is okay. Yeah. In pieces is okay. It's not a problem. Either one. Just not produced at Costco itself is okay. What? Exactly. Ask. What else? Other product questions? Yeah, go to Publix and buy whatever you want. That's kosher for Pesach. Sure. No problem. What else? Most ingredient questions, the guides and the apps will be more helpful than I am, but I'm happy to help any questions. Yes. Well, what the CRC guide says is pure frozen orange juice concentrate doesn't require...
Fresh.
I don't know the answer.
Because they have different brands. Everyone rushes for the Tropicana because it's the only that has the OU
key. I don't. Does the CRC guy doesn't say anything about fresh? Does the OU guy say anything?
Page 41.
It has orange juice. Orange juice, Tropicana pure premium orange juice when bearing OKP only.
Right, but everyone runs in and it's so fast because it's the only brand that has the OKP.
So,
but what makes the
shop early, shop often? Because it's pasteurized on machinery that might be pasteurizing something that has chametz. Yeah, so emulsifiers, additives, flavorings, all kinds of things. It's likely not the ingredients, it's likely the fact that it's pasteurized on machinery that's not kosher for Pesach. So you gotta get the kosher for Pesach.
There's
not chari, there's nothing you can do. You gotta get the kosher for Pesach one.
Huh?
You gotta get the kosher for Pesach one. There's no other option. Yes. Fresh fruits and vegetables are fine. No, I think fresh fruits and vegetables are all fine. Again, you got to be careful with them, like everything, but... Pre-washed, you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, hold on. Fresh fruit is all fine without a kosher, and fresh vegetables the same thing. What about washed salad? Bagged salad needs to be kosher for Pesach. That's what the CRC says. Yeah? All right, I'll double check with him about that. All right, so better to get the ones with the P. Okay, what else? Any other questions? Frozen blueberries. I think frozen fruit. Blueberries are fruit, right? Frozen is okay as long as it's not sweetened or cooked and contains no additives. All right, the hardest work you do for Pesach is coming to this workshop. The rest is easy. It's downhill from here, so...
Thank you.